For the last 20 years, I have awakened in bondage. Each day, I look forward to tomorrow with the goal to finish what I've started. Each day, I pick up the law books looking for the keys to the front gate, because on the other side of that gate is my mom, my children, and my grandchildren. This is an excerpt of the biography Nate Hill wrote and published from the penitentiary. This is his book, Changes. Now, you might recognize the name from a recent controversy with MC8 about snitching, but this isn't about that. It's about Nate Hill's story, and it's a big story. And you can click on the link in the description to buy his book, Changes, Story of a Chicago Kingpin. Now, by his own account, Nate Hill was one of the biggest black coke dealers in America in the late 80s and early 90s, moving several thousand kilos a month at his peak. And he was a burgeoning media mogul as well. He launched a record label with hit acts like Nuttin' Nice and Crucial Conflict, and he produced Lisa Raye's very first movie, though it never came out. That was the movie that the MC8 controversy was about, and he even published a Hebrew Israelite newspaper before fleeing federal indictment while still in his late 20s, successfully hiding out in Africa for several years, all while recovering from an assassination attempt on the streets of Chicago that left him partially paralyzed for a time. He also has a daughter with Carly Red of Love and Hip Hop Atlanta fame. Now in 1995, Nate Hill was sentenced to life in prison for distributing over 2,000 keys of cocaine in the Chicago area. That was what the indictment talked about, but he did a lot more. And most of the cocaine came from cartel people in California and then in Mexico. And the feds introduced evidence that they knew for sure that he generated at least $15 million in profit, not gross sales. It was a big national news story. So Nate Hill made the top 15 U.S. Most Wanted list. The U.S. Marshals caught him in a city called Conakry in Guinea, and the United States Diplomatic Security Service and the Ghanaian National Police all worked with the U.S. Marshals to bring Hill into custody and return him to the U.S. He had been actually set up in that country running a coffee camp plantation and making a lot of money selling coffee. Now, Nate Hill was born in the Pocket Town section on the south side of Chicago, and in the indictment they said he was the major cocaine supplier of the gangster disciples and the vice lords. And Nate Hill himself in the book says he was supplying the black disciples, the black peacestones, the vice lords, the gangster disciples, and the new breeds with thousands of kilos of cocaine from the mid-80s until about 1995 when he claims he stopped. In 1991, when he was at his peak, Hill was shot in Chicago and nearly killed. He was paralyzed for a while. And the reason he got shot was that one of the gangs thought he had left Chicago for L.A., and New York, where he set up the offices of his record company to avoid paying street tax. Nate Hill himself told jurors this in his opening remarks, though he didn't say which gang it was. But this gives an interesting insight into how the street politics of Chicago worked at that time. You had to pay if you were going to sell dope in Chicago. Now remember that the gangster disciple indictment of 95, when Larry Hoover and most of the hierarchy of the GDs were swooped up from Illinois state prisons where they were already serving time for crimes they'd been personally convicted of over the years, Operation Headache it was called, and eventually Hoover and the rest of the GD hierarchy were convicted of a massive RICO that centered around the GDs forcing drug dealers in Chicago pay taxes to operate in GD territory. And of course you had Willie Lloyd on the vice lord side, who was infamous for his extortion game. So the indictment covered specifically the years of 87 to 95 and the vice lords and the gangster disciples. And Hill said this, quote, "If the government had offered me 5 years in prison, I would have taken it," said Hill, representing himself at the trial, "but they want to make an example out of me." Feds weren't going to give Nate Hill any 5 or 10 or even 20-year plea. Now, you always wonder what motivates someone to risk life in prison for a few years of the good life, and perhaps this snippet from Nate Hill's book, Changes, will just help you understand what his childhood home was like in the Pocketown section on the south side. Quote, "The wood furnace barely warmed the house. The winters were severe in Chicago. We could count on the furnace to fill the house with smoke, but not heat. Mom couldn't escape the smoke because she was unable to move around. His mother had gotten sick. So in the midst of winter, when it was pitch black outside and 0 degrees, we would have our front door wide open." So this is him describing growing up in the 70s in a big major city. I mean, it sounds like something out of the country. So Hill was able to successfully hide out in Africa for several years, but the break that led to his arrest came when the investigator traveled to Las Vegas to interview somebody held on other charges, and they ended up arresting a woman named Alicia Tapes, a former girlfriend and the mother of three of Mrs. Hill's children. And Tapes had been indicted in the same case and agreed to cooperate in the investigation, and she said that Nate Hill and Tanya Buford, his current girlfriend, had traveled to California and got false passports where they went to Mexico and then the Bahamas and then Sierra Leone and then Guinea, where they were hiding out. And U.S. Marshal contacted the State Department to help them find Nate Hill in Africa. And they eventually found out that he was in a small country called Guinea on the West African coast. It's in, north of Nigeria. Eventually, a representative of the Ghanaian government named Mr. Lass rounded up a Ghanaian passport that included a photo with a striking resemblance to Nate Hill. He showed it to the U.S. Marshals, and they had an Illinois driver's license with the same photo and a Social Security card and a Chicago-based birth certificate, all bearing the name of Jimmy Earl Robinson. Quote, "It looked to me like we had a Chicago boy who wanted us to think he wasn't Nathan Hill." That's what the representative of the Ghanaian government said, but of course it was. And the Ghanaian National Police arrested Hill without incident on charges of operating a continuing criminal enterprise, money laundering, and using false documents. Before they could get him out of the country, Nate Hill supposedly offered $50,000 bribes to the Ghanaian police for his escape. But the Ghanaian, which is a lot of money over there, but the president of the country personally intervened to stop efforts by Mr. Hill's lawyers and others to either escape or get his case tried in Guinea. And while Nate Hill was in the U.S. top 15 wanted, he was actually operating as a legal businessman in Guinea, selling tons of coffee. I mean, he was a natural-born businessman after all. So while in Africa, Nate was making money selling coffee. He was a coffee, kind of a high level, large amounts of coffee. I think he had a coffee plantation. And the guy certainly did have a knack for business. Listen to how he started his cocaine empire. A guy owed him $300 for fixing a car, or maybe it was he had stolen a car, I don't remember. And instead of giving him $300, he gave him $300 worth of cocaine, and he was off to the races. Now, as he tells it in his book, Hill grew up poor under the thumb of a hard father in Pocketown who semi-abandoned the family when the mother got sick. He got into stealing cars. And like I said, he was either, he was owed $300 for fixing a car or stealing it for someone, or he stole some parts or something. And the guy said, "Well, I'll give you $300 worth of cocaine instead of $300 in cash." And this was in the mid-80s. And he doubled the money in a few hours by sitting around at something called Base Camp, which was a house in Pocketown where people were coming to buy and freebase cocaine. This was on the eve of crack's arrival in Chicago. This is pre-crack. One of Hill's methods to hide the proceeds of his drug business was to launder money through a bus company he invested in called America. So Hill was very sophisticated with the millions of dollars he was bringing in. He set up a record company called Pocketown Records, which eventually he was running out of New York, which might have been one of the things that caused him to get shot. And he had two groups, Crucial Conflict, you might remember the hit song Hey, and then Nuttin' Nice, which was an R&B group that had a few kind of mid-level hits. And a brief aside into the complicated strategies and outcomes of snitches in major cases. Get an idea of the logistics of what was going on. One of the guys who confessed to being a courier in the beginning of December of 92 and into January of 93, so just really a month, this guy named Alvarez, He admitted making 7 trips by commercial airlines in that month from California to Chicago, traveling with luggage that each time was filled with between 5 to 10 keys of cocaine, which he delivered to Hill's underling. So that's one courier who brought roughly 50 keys in a single month, but he had couriers running all the time. He had trucks coming, and interestingly, that Alvarez guy found out that another courier had been found not guilty at trial, and he tried to withdraw his plea and testimony on the grounds of mental illness, but the judge wasn't buying it, and Alvarez went away along with Nate Hill, even though he told on him. After these couriers started getting arrested, I assume Alvarez was one of them, they started chartering Learjets. And between March of 94 and October of 94, a guy named Ward, on behalf of Nate Hill, chartered 8 different trips to Chicago through Van Nuys, California. And testimony was presented at trial that each Learjet trip involved the transportation of about 50 bricks of cocaine. So there's another 350 kilos. While Nate Hill was hiding out in Africa, his sister was acting as a front for Pocket Town Records and helping to launder drug money. And eventually her and 2 others were convicted of money laundering, and 2 of the couriers were acquitted. And before the 1996 trial, 11 other defendants pled guilty. And Nate Hill had this to say about his time on the run, quote, "I ran home to Africa because I was afraid." Nate Hill said the government's case was built on deals with liars trying to avoid stiff prison sentences. And Nate Hill defended himself, and in his book he talks about the fact that he was becoming this media mogul, and he thinks that any black voice with any power in the media was going to be squashed. For example, Larry Hoover's 21st Century Vote Initiative, which had turned out voters in the 1994 Illinois elections, was one of those things, and Hill questions whether the 1995 Gangster Disciple indictment, which came a year after Hoover stepped up his political activities, had a connection. And he says something else interesting to at least think about, who knows if it's true. In 1995, the year after Hoover got political with growth and development and 21st Century Vote, homicides fell in Chicago by about 20%, which Nate Hill attributes to Larry Hoover's orders to slow down violence to the Gangster Disciples, who were the dominant group in Chicago at that time. Now, this could have some validity, but of course, 1995 was also the year Nate Hill's cocaine stopped coming in so plentifully to the Windy City from his Mexican cartel connections as well. And Nate Hill talks about his own involvement with the now popular but then obscure Hebrew Israelite movement, and the fact that as part of his burgeoning little media empire, he did publish a Hebrew Israelite Final Call-esque, if you will, newspaper that he says was picking up a lot of momentum before his indictment and eventual incarceration. Now, given Nate Hill's cash resources, he once lost $8 million in cash hidden in a storage locker. He took that licking and kept on ticking. In the first stages of success he was having in a music business, Nothing Nice, Crucial Conflict, he got this movie made with MC8 and Lisa Ray. He had a Hebrew Israelite themed newspaper. Who knows? He could have been a real force on the social landscape. On the other hand, it's also easy to start businesses and have a little success when you dump enough money into it. But we'll never know what would have become of Nate Hill's media empire. Definitely had amazing business skills, though, that's for sure. In his book, he describes in minutia how he turned $300 of cocaine into millions and millions of dollars. I won't go into that here, but you can read his book and check it out. So a little more about the movie. Nate Hill invested more than $700,000 in his drug profits to finance a movie called Reasons, loosely based on Nate Hill's life story. Now, Reasons never saw the light of day. The indictment came out and people blocked its release. But in the words of the federal government, they said this about the plot, quote, "The bad guys won in the end." And this movie was Lisa Ray's introduction to the film industry when she was discovered. And as an interesting aside, Lisa Ray's father was a well-known street figure in Chicago up to the early 80s. I think he was a big numbers guy. And he was in a wheelchair, and he got killed by a younger girlfriend and her brother or something when Lisa Ray was young. And then there's MC8, the star of the film, who supposedly gave some sort of info against Hill, but I don't know how he could have hurt his case when Hill didn't even deny selling cocaine. Hill's only real defense, remember he defended himself, Hill really didn't deny any of the drug charges. He simply said he had stopped selling 5 years before the indictment, which would put him outside of the statute of limitations. And Hill goes into a lot of depth about the logistics of the people we met in California and what went on in Mexico, and I'm not sure what happened with those people. I mean, he doesn't name them by name, I guess, so it's not too much detail. In May of 1999, Nate Hill was convicted by a federal jury of supplying more than 3 tons of cocaine to two of Chicago's largest street gangs, specifically the GDs and the Vice Lords, for nearly a decade. Nate Hill was also found guilty of ordering hits on 3 of his enemies. 2 were killed, and the 3rd survived despite being shot several times in the head. These were mostly people that had tried to kidnap Nate Hill or his family members for ransom. The 7-woman, 5-man jury deliberated over 4 days before convicting Hill on 7 counts of narcotics conspiracy, tax fraud, money laundering, and operating a continuing criminal enterprise. 2 dozen other people had been previously convicted or pled guilty for their roles in Nate Hill's drug operation, which had continued operating for 6 months in 1996 after he was charged and fled the country, authorities said. To get a sense of how much money he was making at his prime, in 1995 alone, Nate Hill went on a $2 million buying spree, purchased an 8-seat aircraft, a 73-foot yacht, a luxury speedboat, and a house near Kankakee with an indoor pool and private lake. This is while he was in his wheelchair and he was starting up Pocket Town Records. In that same year, in 95, agents from the DEA recovered like $2 million in cash of Hill's that was hidden in a trunk of a car at a storage locker in Alsip, Illinois. Now, Nate Hill in his book says there was $8 million in that car and that the feds or the local police stole the rest. But even that, you know, didn't crumble his empire, so he must have had some more millions. So he's making a lot of money. So this was just a partial highlight reel of Nate Hill's book, Changes, a guy from Pocket Town, Southside, Chicago. All the information's from his own book and a few newspaper articles in the Chicago Tribune and press releases from the U.S. Marshals and DEA. If you find it interesting or want to show Nate Hill some support, click the link to buy his ebook, Changes, Story of a Chicago Kingpin, or send him some money. I'll put his inmate number below. Nate Hill, Pocket Town, Chicago, American Dope.